You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
Hello, it's Tara Jean, and I'm back with another Season 4 bonus episode as we continue to uncover the dark underbelly of the International House of Prayer. Again, the subject matter will include talk of spiritual and sexual abuse. Please take care. And stick around at the end of the episode for a special message on what's coming next on Heaven Bent.
So Stuart would just have these outbursts of anger. He would raise his voice at people. He would, literally physically tower over people, get close to their face, put his finger in their face, just like physically intimidate people. Just constantly talk over people, dominate the conversation.
Season 4, bonus episode 5.
He would demonstrate this very authoritarian kind of attitude where he would just routinely tell people, I'm your boss, submit. He would use sarcasm, make jokes at people's expense, right in front of people.
And that's Nathan. As a young man, he gave 7 years of his life to the International House of Prayer in Kansas City, Missouri. He's an IHOP U grad and was also on staff. And we're hearing him talk about Stuart Greaves, a longtime senior leader, preacher, and teacher. Stuart was there with founding leader Mike Bickle since the very beginning of IHOP, all the way back to 99, when, along with a few others, they started this 24/7 prayer meeting that has continued nonstop to this day. Stuart's primary role would be the 20 years he spent leading the prayer room's night watch, between midnight and 6 a.m. But then in more recent years, he'd risen to become the executive director of the entire organization.
He would always be making these comparisons to the person he's talking to. And he would list off his own credentials and do this in a way that was like belittling to the person that he's talking to.
But since my last episode, a lot has changed. Just 2 days before Christmas 2023, IHOP announced that not only had Stuart resigned, but that it was also immediately, formally, and permanently separating from Mike Bickle. To date, no explanation's been given for Stuart's resignation, other than it was the best thing for his health and for him and his family. But IHOP did say that when it comes to Mike Bickle, it had received new information that confirmed to them what they described as inappropriate behavior. We now know that this includes dramatic allegations of clergy sexual abuse by several women going back to the earliest days of his ministry, and often involving this prophecy that he allegedly said to multiple women that God told him, "My wife Diane is going to die, and you're going to become my new wife." Diane is still very much alive, by the way. But back to Stuart Greaves, because much of this episode really is about him, more so the grievances against him. I've tried to reach out to Stuart, but have yet to connect with him to get a comment on any of this, but I'll keep trying.
So talk about how he's more educated than you, how I'm older than you, I speak more languages than, just all these kind of anything he could pull out of his hat that in some way to kind of belittle the person and this comparison. And a lot of stories, staff members were just driven to tears right in front of him. A staff member during one of these confrontations, told him, I'm feeling really intimidated by you. And he said, frankly, that means nothing to me.
So on this episode, we're going to go back to 2014, when a group of 5 former IHOPers, including Nathan, presented a series of grievances in a formal meeting with Mike Bickle and other IHOP leaders. Grievances against Stuart, primarily. And the group of 5 recorded this meeting, and we'll be hearing some of that audio as well. I consider this recording to be from trusted sources. As well, the content reflects much of the official report put out later by the meeting's mediators. Nearly 10 years later, I'm joined by three of the five young men who were present that day. They're going to reflect on the meeting, this time in their life, and of course, the results of this mediation. And they'll also connect some dots with what's happening at IHOP today. So we've already got Nathan. Then there was Gary.
Yeah, thank you. I'm Gary. I was an IHOP U grad also from 2007 to 2011. And I think I was on staff for maybe 6 months after that before I ended up leaving. So we were all friends, and we all saw mistreatment, and we all spoke about it together. And I mean, even more than just like our stories, we had dozens of stories from people that from January 2014, we started collecting and asking people if they would like, if it was okay if we would share this with the executive leadership team, the ELT. So yeah, we already had a connection and, you know, we started this conversation in secret, if you will.
But on April 1st, 2014, the group of five met formally with leadership. And there's plenty of documentation from them and the mediation team that these guys came to the meeting with a pretty large collection of testimonies from their peers. And they were making some very specific accusations as well. Mean and abusive sociopathic behavior, bullying, disciplinary alienation, violation of personal boundaries, and the controlling of domestic spheres.
Yeah, so we had a 4-hour long meeting where we presented all of our stories and grievances. And yeah, in attendance at the meeting, we had the ELT at the time, which was Mike, Alan, Stewart, Dave Slyker, Chuck Mateer, and Peter Herter. And they also brought another board member who we had never seen before. And there were, the Midwestern Ministers Fellowship had three representatives there, including Howard Cordell.
The Midwestern Ministers Fellowship was made up of other Christian leaders in the area, and they had been brought in as the agreed-upon mediators.
We presented all of our own stories of mistreatment in this meeting, including like dozens of other stories that people gave us permission to share. And the stories were intended to be, you know, emblematic of a systemic problem, not just stories in isolation. So we really wanted to draw patterns with the stories and demonstrate a pattern of behavior. You know, this was just the tip of the iceberg as we saw it. And, you know, we weren't seeking like personal apologies from this. We wanted to see organizational reform happen. Stuart Greaves was the leader most frequently mentioned in all of these stories. And like was said, you know, he wasn't even supposed to be at the meeting. We were kind of ambushed when we walked in that he was just there.
Kendall here. So I think that a real significant thing that we had agreed on before we met with the ELT was who was going to be at that meeting.
And yes, that's Kendall, the third guy from the original group of five advocates that's joining me this episode. So now we've got Nathan, Gary, and Kendall.
I moved to KC in 2008. I come from a non-charismatic background and IHOP U student until 2012 when I graduated. We really wanted to be able to present our grievances to Mike without some of the direct leaders that had caused the abuses to be present at that meeting. We wanted to feel safe going into that meeting. So specifically, we had requested that Stuart Greaves, the director of the Night Watch at the time, not be present at that meeting, since many of our stories, as we'll talk about, involved him personally.
Nathan, question for you. What were you anticipating you would get from leaders out of this? Did you go in thinking you were going in for a fight? Did you think it would be a heart-to-heart?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I'm not really sure what I was expecting. My experiences when I brought up these issues with the leaders in the past, particularly Stuart Greaves, is that he was pretty hostile. So to be honest with you, I wasn't expecting them to do much organizational reform based off of what we say. I thought they would be pretty resistant to doing that, and they were. And we did not get through all of the stories either in the 4-hour meeting. We there was an entire section of stories actually that we just completely left off because there's just not time to get to it. But the first like category of stories was stories that occurred in the IHOPU classrooms. So IHOP is an environment where there's a lot of pressure to conform your thinking to their beliefs. And that pressure is felt very keenly inside of the IHOPU classroom. And it was just a very hostile environment to asking questions or challenging any of IHOP's theology. And so we had a lot of stories of students who attempted at some point to do this. So students, you know, who just asked a sort of challenging question in class, and these students were treated very harshly by teachers. So, you know, teachers would just raise their voice at the students, just, you know, holler at them in front of the class. Their character was questioned in front of the class. They were just, you know, embarrassed in front of the class. The teacher would like turn the tables on them and just start firing off rounds of questions at the students. You know, there's one story we told of a student who was just driven to tears in front of the class, you know, as a result of all this. One student was told, you know, the teacher said to him, "I'm fighting on the Lord's side in this conversation. Whose side are you on?" You know, and another student, the teacher told him, "The angel came to Mike Bickle, not to you. Who do you think we're going to listen to here?" And then these students were also, you know, privately reprimanded for asking questions. You know, students were told to stop asking questions in class, and that challenging questions of this nature were not appropriate in the classroom. So Stuart Greaves was one of the teachers that I'm talking about with all of these stories. One student confronted him about how he was treating students in the class, and Stuart told him, "I'm the drill sergeant. My students are soldiers, and you don't question my methods with how I train my soldiers." And so just it was just shown time and time again that it's just not a safe environment for students who have any kind of opposing theological ideas and voicing that in any way. So that's kind of one big category of stories we told. A second kind of category of stories we're told was mostly of staff members who, for one reason or another, had a one-on-one kind of confrontation with a leader. So in these kind of one-on-one confrontations, people were just bullied and just this very like domineering and bombastic behavior from the leaders toward these people in these one-on-one conversations. Stuart was mentioned a lot in these stories.
Kendall here. One of the things looking back at a lot of these stories, I think, is how minor the infractions were that we're talking about. I think like the questions that students were asking was so, you sort of like, when you look at them on a paper, you're like, is this really the thing that the interpretation of this one passage or saying, "Hey, you know, that's normally my day off. I'd rather not come to a meeting on that day because that's my day off." So they feel so small. And there's this wonder of why is there this outsized response to things that seem so inconsequential in sort of the grand scheme of a religious tradition or just even community life. And I think, you know, the story, this was a big shock for me personally. I said at the top, I came from a non-charismatic and non-hierarchical religious tradition originally. I'm not religious anymore, but so my background comes from a much more democratic religious tradition. This was shocking to me to see how much anything was willing to be sacrificed in order to reinforce sort of hierarchical control and keep pressure on people to conform. Time and time again, this a phrase that was used was causing confusion. We didn't want anyone to do anything that would cause confusion, which basically meant create any sort of people believing things that weren't reinforcing what was said from the stage. And again, it was the only context in which to disagree with anyone in leadership is in a private one-on-one conversation with the leader who said the thing that you disagree with, which requires a significant amount of certainty from the from a person just asking a question if they're going to seek out a one-on-one conversation with some of these leaders.
This is Gary. I would second everything that Kendall had said. And you also have to remember these are 18 and 19 and 20 year olds. So they're not, I mean, these aren't going toe to toe with someone on equal footing. And it doesn't take, you know, a critical theorist to realize that there are vast power distinctions between a 45, 50 year old professional orator who can think on their feet and gaslight at the drop of a hat, and someone who can hardly utter two sentences before the anointed man, and I'll underscore man of God. There's no match. I remember I was in a meeting, and someone, and it was a 19-year-old kid. I wasn't really close with him, but you know, I knew him. I was in this meeting, and there's probably about 15 of us, and this 19-year-old kid said, "Stuart, I really don't like when you invoke terror in your like methods." And Stuart didn't, he was very calm. And he said, "Guys, I think this is a really teachable moment. You see, your problem is that you're dichotomizing the terror of God with the mercy of God. But the terror of God is always connected with the mercy of God. They're entwined and entangled at the deepest levels. When God shows his terror, he's also showing his mercy. In the same way, if I'm invoking terror, it's because I'm showing you mercy." And
it's really scary.
It's scary. The thing is, after this meeting, I turned to the kid and I was like, "Well, that was some bullshit." And and the kid looked at me and he's like, "No, he's right. This is an attribute of God I don't know anything about. Stuart told me to go to the prayer room and pray about how, you know, my theology is doing violence against God because, you know, this whole, like, you think you're more merciful than God." I mean, it's really sick and twisted. But at the end of the day, that whole gaslighting process just served to underwrite that Stuart can be terrible and get away with it because he can talk himself out of it.
So that was a lot about the first category of stories that Nathan, Gary, and Kendall, and two others brought to this mediation meeting in 2014. So incidents that occurred in classrooms.
The second one, it was specifically about Stuart Greaves, that he will not stop abusing people. We had, like I said, we had dozens of stories. I'd say about 20 of them were about Stuart. We showed a pattern of abuse. And the way that this was talked about after the fact was that we wanted some sort of punitive public judgment of Stuart. Like, we would bring him up on stage and publicly rebuke him like a Roman spectacle. And that was just bullshit. But that's when they were trying to be malicious against us. This is what they would say to us. I mean, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but when Mike finally responds, 7 months later, that's what he says. "Sorry, guys, we're not into punitive judgments against people." But, well, you're not into saving victims either. You're going to let Stuart continue to do what he's doing?
This comes from, I'm not going to use a real name. I'm just using a name, Anna Michelle, a girl on the night watch.
Thanks to this recording, we can now hear a much younger Nathan sharing some of his grievances directly with the leaders, including Stuart. Just a bit of backstory here, and without getting too much into the weeds of it, Anna, this young woman they're calling Anna, she was having a conflict with another leader over her relationship with another woman in the IHOP community. Anna was anxious about it and dreaded the possibility that the situation would escalate so much that Stuart would do this thing that he was known for doing and want to meet with her in a side room.
"Okay, so here's what she writes. I'm sitting in the prayer room doing the 4 a.m. set. It was really hard to engage. I saw Stuart in the prayer room from the corner of my eye. He got up from his chair and started walking. Secretly, I thought to myself, what if he's going to come talk to me? I closed my eyes and hoped he would pass by me and keep going. To my horror, he taps me on the shoulder. A few minutes before he approaches me, I'm thinking, just say, I won't talk to you unless it's with no, no. I open my eyes and say to him, no. He looks back at me, surprised that I was not following him into the side room. He looks at me bewildered and mouths, come on. I shake my head negatively. He mouths one more time, and I respond the same way. Appearing to me frustrated, he sits next to me really close and faces me. Come on, Anna. And he starts to plead and says, please, Anna, please. Then he states, don't make this hard. Then he states he was using gentle words, but the tone and spirit of it was extremely demanding, as if I absolutely did not have an option. I felt so pressured, like I did not have an option. I stood my ground and shook my head. He states, Anna, I am one of the leaders at IHOP, and I am on the board of trustees. And I responded, so? He continued pressuring me by saying, come on, Anna. And I said, you can't force me to go into the side room. He responds back and says, I'm not forcing you, I'm trying to convince you. I started feeling really uncomfortable, like I just wanted to leave. And I became frightened when he would not leave me alone. His gigantic presence towers over my 80-pound body. I give in, and before I know it, Stuart and I are in the side room. I caved because I felt so pressured and uncomfortable. In that moment, I was actually frightened that he would physically do something to me if I did not follow his orders. Stuart first gives background by saying there's a chain of command that is not happening and it needs to happen. I have been involved from the get-go of this whole thing. I thought you were going to ask me a question. I might not answer, I reply. My question is, are you the one in the middle of the reconciliation? Asked Stuart. This is when I choose to stand up and tell him I'm not answering, and I walked out of this room. My whole body was shaking. And I left the prayer room and cried for an hour straight. She said, I was so scared because his strength was used to instill fear in me, especially since he is physically the biggest person in IHOP, a senior leader, and I am physically one of the smallest. To this day, I have nightmares about Stuart trying to corner me and speak with me. I came home sobbing, barely able to walk in the door. I was hysterical as I wept on my sister's arms, feeling ashamed and violated emotionally. This entire situation with leadership made me depressed and weep more than I ever have in my entire life. And what I know of this girl's history, that's a big statement to say.
Does anybody else want to say anything with the 4 minutes we have left? We're allowing for 5 minutes overtime. Anybody?
That's the mediator, Howard Cordell, from the Midwestern Ministers Fellowship.
Alan, would you like to say anything, Dave, Stuart?
Well, the immediate thing that comes to my mind.
So we know that most of those stories relayed in that room over those 4 hours were about Stuart. And he did speak up at the end of the meeting to share how this impacted him and what was on his mind.
So thank you. I will submit to the judgment of the brothers and do whatever I need to do that they deem necessary.
Now, I don't know how extraordinary this moment was in this meeting where Stuart had a pretty emotional reaction to everything that you guys had shared. Who wants to kind of take over and tell me the story of that?
Yeah, like, I can do that. So this is Nathan again. So yeah, after we had shared all these stories, the ELT had about 20-30 minutes in the meeting where they could kind of give a little bit of a response to us. So Stuart just breaks down crying in the meeting, and he says he has empathy, a lack of empathy, and that he is quick-tempered. And he said that he uses his intuition, or he relies on his intuition too much to just make assumptions about people and go with that rather than actually listening to people. So those were kind of the three things he brought up. And then, you know, he was weeping and kind of, He apologized to me directly at one point.
Nathan, if you allow me to say this, I never intended to be tangential in my apologies.
And then, you know, Mike gave kind of his response. And just by the way, Mike Bickle was absolutely insufferable in this meeting. He was like, the whole meeting, he was super chummy with us. He was making jokes. I mean, during the breaks, he and Howard were telling golf stories and like roaring with laughter.
No, Sam makes big jokes about that. Does he? He all the time.
Is my swing interrupting your conversation?
Yeah.
Oh.
And then, you know, Mike, like at one point during a break, I was sitting down in the chair. He comes up behind me and like grabs my shoulders and kind of gives me a shake, kind of like a shoulder rub. And he just goes like, that was amazing. You know, great job telling your stories. How old are you? 25. Whoa. I remember when I was 25. That's awesome. I don't know. He was just very like, just chummy.
I appreciate the courage you guys have to be in this meeting. I was 26 and 28 once, and I totally get what it means to sit in front of your former leaders that you opened your heart to and you esteemed and you felt bruised by and talk like this. You know, like I like to tell the students, I wasn't born 58. I got there one year at a time, and I'm going back 26, 28, 30, having this meeting. I appreciate it. Totally appreciate it.
Thank
get
you.
What that takes to do this. Thank
you. Yeah.
A whole lot of hurdles you got to jump over to do that. And I appreciate it.
Okay.
And
so,
you've done it in a great spirit, too.
Yeah.
Really good spirit. Really easy to hear.
But while in one breath Mike was saying stuff like that, well done, in really good spirits, he also told them that they were being bullies.
He says, you guys are bullies. You're bullying us. The behavior that you all experienced, you are doing to us.
A bit of what you're doing is a little bit of what you're complaining about, just right now.
Oh, no, we get that.
I mean, you're threatening us and bullying us. You're being that, which you just protested about. And so just take a step back and breathe that in for a second. You know, and think, oh, gee whiz, it's so easy, that line is. And so... so I'm not really appreciating the tone of your threat. I don't think that's really the appropriate way to go forward with this. It's our first time we've ever met on this. We look it through. We have to have due process with everybody. Because you didn't get due process on some things, which I think you really didn't on some things. I don't know the percentage of whether it's 10% or 90%, because I had other people needed that brought in. But everybody needs due process on this.
He just didn't appreciate the tone that we had. So, you know, he got very defensive pretty immediately. That was, I mean, he on the one hand, he was like super chummy with us, but then when it was actually his turn to speak, he got kind of defensive.
Two things, Kendall speaking again, two things that stood out to me about the end of the meeting. One was, you know, in Stuart's repentance, his breaking down and crying, he said that he would, you know, submit to any decision that was made by his peers about what should happen to his leadership role going forward. And, you know, since that time, we've only seen Stuart be promoted rather than any follow-up happen. And, you know, throughout the meeting, and even in the communications following the meeting, you know, Mike was very focused on, give us the names of the people whose stories you have. Give us the identities of these people. We want to go apologize to these people. And we had to sort of repeat again and again, we're not looking for individual apologies. We're looking for a promise of systemic change. I don't think any of us had real faith that a promise of systemic change would happen. But we really wanted to focus that we don't think that at this juncture, These leaders are safe people to just hand over contact information of people that they had mistreated in the past. And we didn't think that personal apologies were appropriate response to what we were sharing.
And Terry or Jean, you might want to edit this out if whatever, but we met with the ELT on April 1st, 2014. In that meeting, Stuart Greaves broke down crying, repenting because of his lack of empathy, his anger issues, and his misuse of his intuition when he's going and solving problems. 3.5 weeks later, a young woman met Stuart regarding sexual assault by a staff member. You probably know because it's on your podcast.
Gracia, episode 6, full circle moment.
Episodes, continue. Absolutely. 3 weeks later, this happens. So Stuart knows he doesn't have empathy. Stuart knows he has anger issues.
He's just wept about it.
I'm trying not to cuss. He just wept about it. And what Gracia says in that episode, after she shares her story with him, he doesn't have any sympathy for me. No shit. Like, not to her, but like, of course he doesn't. For me, on the podcast, you talk about this is a failure of grievance process, and you're absolutely right, but this is a failure. It's like an absolute miscarriage of justice on behalf of the ELT. Mike Bickle, Alan Hood, and Dave Slyker were all there, and they rubber stamped him, and they said they would not discipline Stuart unless we brought out all the victims of the 20 stories that we had, so he could face them one by one in a private meeting, which would only increase further victimization. It's so stupid. I mean, they were platforming Stuart when they knew he was abusive. They were platforming him when they knew he was abusive. And they
Why?
Knew we were.
Why? Why do they do that?
Stuart's useful.
I'll let Gary answer here, but I think it's really important to remind us all that these are personal opinions being shared. And again, I've tried to reach out to Stuart, but have yet to be successful in getting any response.
Stuart will circle the wagon to protect anyone on the ELT.
So he's loyal. He's also really Bible focused, right? Like, he's very intellectual Bible guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, he's not dumb. He's a quick thinker. He's a great orator. He plays with, you know, students' heads like a Rubik's cube, and we'll give it back to him.
Kendall here. Stuart is an incredibly black and white thinker. He's intelligent, but he certainly is the ends justify the means, and that obedience to authority is more important than any other consideration. That loyalty is more valuable than some form of like ambiguity or disagreement. And that hierarchical relationships are incredibly important. In one of my conversations with Stuart Greaves, he told me, he said, "Kendall, I will never be your friend. I'm your boss. I'm your leader. I'll never be your friend." And he said, "I am not Mike Bickle's friend, but Mike Bickle is my boss. It would be inappropriate for me to be friends with him." And that top-down leadership structure, these are my soldiers. I train them how I want to. And how dare you question the way I train my soldiers? That's the worldview that Stuart thinks of. And it's all about keeping the machine moving forward. And apparently this machine leaves behind a lot of mangled bodies in the process.
Before the group of five advocates left the meeting that day, they gave the leaders seven signs of good faith. and we went into them in more detail back in Season 4, Episode 5. But basically, they were seven gestures that the guys had come up with that they would be requiring from IHOP in order to continue with this mediation process. They included the introduction of a new written grievance policy with whistleblower protection, something comparable to standard practices in the corporate or academic world. But after the meeting, after that face-to-face presentation of grievances and the signs, what happened next?
Yeah, this is Gary. I can do some of that. So after our April 1st meeting, Mike actually, he did send out several like small emails, but he was going to, his big response, that was 7 months later, but he sent out small ones thanking us, being really grateful.
So Mike's big response to their presentation of grievances, it came months later when members of the group of five were actually starting to wonder if they were going to get any response at all. But then in comes this big email from Mike. It starts off with this sentence. As I wrote in my previous email to you, I want to correct all the deficiencies, sins, errors, weaknesses, etc., in our leadership team and in what your group referred to as the meta-narrative. Then he says, I'm serious about making the wrong things right. And then after that, in the letter, he shared what he would and would not agree to.
And we weren't really satisfied with any of his signs of good faith. But the one that I think we were specifically disturbed by is the second sign, which was disciplining leaders like Stuart, although we had a couple others on there that had shown patterns of abuse. And I just want to underscore that removing someone like Stuart wasn't punitive. It was good for any potential future victims of his. So what Mike said basically in his long response on the second one was the thing about the public rebuke. If Howard wants us to publicly rebuke Stuart, we will. Well, we never asked for that. We cared about Stuart's victims. We didn't really, he can get in a canoe and go down the river. We just don't care. And then the second thing is in that response, Mike accused us of wanting, as I said, to punitively discipline him. We never asked for punitive punishment or redemptive discipline. We wanted him to stop victimizing those under his care. We were focalizing the victims throughout the entire process. The last thing that Mike said, the only way that Stuart would be disciplined by the ELT was through meeting every victim face to face, like I said. And the thing that I keep coming back to that's so baffling to me is Stuart already confessed. Stuart already had due process, at least with us. So this idea that Stuart, maybe these stories aren't true, they knew they were true. They just didn't want to remove him.
Yeah. This is Nathan. Can I jump in on one thing too that he said? Mike, in his response to us, refused to acknowledge any kind of systemic problems. He made very clear that, you know, this is just some leaders with some stories. For him, it was just very individual case by case. And he refused to see any kind of pattern or any kind of like systemic leadership culture that had created these dozens and dozens of stories. From Mike, it was very much just about, you know, like everything's fine. We're okay. So a few of our leaders have what he called quote unquote deficiencies, but overall, like our leadership culture is okay. Our system is okay. Our organization is okay. It doesn't need reform like you're suggesting. It's just a few leaders need a little bit of repentance here and there.
And I think, this is Gary again, I think for us, it all came to a head at Alan Hood's quote-unquote family meeting in March 2015.
This is the meeting we also heard about in Season 4, Episode 5 in much more detail. And honestly, I think what happened in that meeting will probably come up again, but it was a meeting held in reaction to one of those dramatic periods of unrest in their community. Alan Hood led the meeting. He served as the associate director of IHOP KC from 2000 to 2020. He was also the president of IHOP U from 2003 to 2016. Today, he lives in Florida with his wife. He started a new ministry, and he has emerged as one of the primary public-facing advocates for Mike Bickle's alleged victims of clergy sexual abuse.
In the meeting, Alan spent about 10 minutes describing our April 1st meeting. And I'm not trying to pick on Alan. I think Alan's doing a lot of good things now. So I'm really trying to show, because with Alan, Dave was there, Mike was there at this family meeting, so is Chuck Mateer. So a lot of the ELT, this is kind of like the IHOP machine at work, and the way that they subtly, I guess, circle the wagons, protect, like, as a protective mechanism. But Alan repeats all of these assumptions of Mike in Mike's response, riddled with mischaracterizations that make us look terrible. He repeats, these people, you know, bullied us, intimidated us, coerced us. And it's so funny because I don't know when they put it up, but IHOPU has a definition of bully on their website right now. And it says, bullying can only happen when one group is stronger than another. A weaker person cannot bully a stronger person. And as I said previously, we didn't have any power. They were an international ministry. So there's no way we could bully them. I was going to community college and I didn't have a car. I was hitchhiking to community college. Like, what was I gonna do? I had 200 followers on Facebook. There's just no way that we had any sort of power other than lifting up the mirror to them. And you know, if we did threaten them, it's only stop hurting people or we're gonna tell someone.
It's now 2024, and Nathan, Gary, and Kendall, and the other two from this group, who all really stuck their necks out with this mediation process, they're now watching this enormous scandal play out at the International House of Prayer.
I first heard about it just mere hours before that Friday meeting where Stuart and Dave got up to sort of, you know, now I would say kick off their disinformation campaign about the allegations. And it was like seeing the same mechanisms at work right out of the gate. I think the similarity of IHOP, the leadership team's response, just sort of the way that they phrase things and the sort of methods that they used, they seemed also familiar. And we found ourselves emotionally feeling right back in that place where we had been almost a decade previous.
Anyone else want to react to or share their reactions to the news or when they found out?
Sure. This is Gary. I think what happened, we read about it. I think it was late at night. And I remember waking up in the morning and texting actually Nathan and Kendall that I felt like we were waking up in 2014 again, which was, at least for me, one of the darkest times of my life, you know? and sort of like Kendall, like I didn't even think about IHOP anymore in my day-to-day life. But trauma sometimes works like a time machine and it takes you back to places you don't want to go back to. And that's what it felt like for me. Like I was being forced into this time machine to go back into a place. And we're telling a story, at least, you know, the story of 2014 was a story without winners. There's no victors in that story. It was a story of defeat where we walked away feeling more hopeless after that process, you know? I'm thankful that we did move on, but now I feel like we have to move on from this eventually.
Do you have any hope in this moment that maybe this time change could come?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think change and victory is the same thing. I think there's going to be tremendous loss, regardless what happens. Tremendous, tremendous loss for everyone involved.
Let's say there's an IHOPU ministry student listening right now. What would you like to say to them about IHOP, about your shared experiences, about what's happening right now?
Kendall here. I'd like to talk on this. The IHOP leadership team is very forceful at creating a reality, whether that reality is theological beliefs or religious practice. It's very good at creating a world and making it think that, and being so specific and so overarching that it seems like there isn't a way to poke holes or to get out of that narrative. It seems so believable. And the leadership puts so much expectation. You can't ask a question if you don't ask it in the right way. You can't disagree unless you disagree in the right way. What about all the experiences that have happened? You know, you have to be accountable to all of Mike's prophetic experiences. We were all there, and we really believed. I think that's one of the things. When we were there, we weren't just people watching the sidelines. We were really part of it, and we really believed it.
Anybody else want to answer that same question?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely second what Kendall just said. So if I was talking to an IHOPU student right now, I would say go home and don't come back. The sooner that you don't come back, the better. I'm really sorry that I still tried to make it work after I graduated IHOPU. I went on staff for 6 months and I was miserable. And at the ripe old age of 26, I started community college from scratch all over. And for a long time, I had to wrestle with regret that I spent so long at that ministry, even though for a long time, I was like, should I stay? Should I go? It's like a Band-Aid. You just have to go.
Yeah, I just want to really second or third all of that. For me, I had to begin stepping outside of the bubble just in small ways. You know, I started going to the community college. I started going to a chess club. I started watching movies. I mean, started reading books. You know, slowly, it was just like a slow integrative process to sort of work my way outside of the bubble. It wasn't like a single moment that just pulled me out. And I think it's like that with a lot of cult groups. It's just kind of a slow integrative process that brings you out of that. And yeah, I would just say, if I was talking to a student, I wouldn't try to have that one moment with them where I just try to convince them. I would say just follow what passions you have. Like what do you want to learn? What do you want to read about? What do you want to learn? You know, get your head out of the single narrative that drives that place. You know, and they're very good at crafting that narrative. It's an all-encompassing, life-encompassing narrative that sucks you in, especially when you're 18 years old. You know, I came to IHOP when I was 18 and I got sucked in. It was this grandiose narrative that I wanted to give my life to. Yeah, I would just tell them, follow what you're passionate about and, you know, make it just have one thing in your life outside the bubble.
You know, something that we didn't really get into, and I don't know how much you guys are willing to share, but like at the end of all this now today, you know, knowing everything you've gone through, are you guys still Christians?
What do you mean by Christian?
Never mind. I regret asking the question.
No. I think we're all pretty settled in our post-Christian life, and we're pretty happy with that.
Thanks to Nathan, Kendall, and Gary for joining me this episode, and thank you for listening. I've now been creating Heaven Bent from my kitchen table and home studio/clothes closet for the last 5 years. It all started in 2019 when I finally decided to investigate those gold teeth claims from my own childhood church. And y'all know me by now. I'm not a charismatic Christian anymore. I'm certainly not even a regular Christian. I am not a Christian. This is not a Christian podcast. But I am still very curious about this world. Church history, worship behavior, claims of supernatural signs and wonders. And I also really care about the people. And what's happened more and more over the last 5 years is that I'm here, a backslider, looking back and going, "You guys okay?" And especially as it turned out with season 4, in many cases, they're not okay. That could have been me. Or my daughter. And for all these reasons and more, I feel a calling and a sense of duty to continue. But this is really time-consuming work. I research, write, record, and produce Heaven Bent myself. And to date, despite its success globally, I've been unsuccessful in securing any sponsorships or meaningful advertisements because of an understandable hesitancy to attach one's brand to a podcast that deals with religious matters. Dark religious matters. So it's come to this. This is my Tammy Faye Baker moment. Please give. I've now started a Patreon at patreon.com/heavenbent. You can show me your appreciation for the last 4 seasons if it meant something to you, and support what's yet to come. That's patreon.com/heavenbent. And for everyone who's already a subscriber on Heavenbent Plus on Apple Podcasts, thank you, and stand by. As soon as I have something new, you will always be the first to hear it, and it will always remain ad-free. Thank you so much, and until next time.